Time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
Indeed it is at 20 to 10 on Sunday Extra, time for Outsiders, and thank you to Uncle Barry. Your outsiders this morning are Mark Fletcher. He's a blogger, occasional contributor to New Matilda, playwright Van Badham, occasional contributor to the Australian Groniad, and Chris Berg from the Institute of Public Affairs. Welcome to you all.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, Jonathan.
Hello, everybody. Hello. Now, asylum seekers, very much in the news, and very much against, I suspect, the wishes of the incoming Abbott government. What do you make of this, Chris, the closing of the door on the flow of information in a lot of areas, but particularly this one, which is particularly newsy right now on asylum seekers?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I'm not sure that the flow of information is going to be successful, or stemming the flow of information is going to be successful policy. What we know about the incentives to hop on a boat to Australia is that the lack of certainty is an incentive to try to come here. And by stemming the flow of information and by preventing asylum seekers or preventing the Australian or Indonesian media about knowing exactly who's coming to Australia, you might be creating more of that uncertainty and therefore almost encouraging people to hop on boats. One of the things that you need to do if your sole goal is to stop the boats, the thing you really need to do is make it absolutely certain that hopping on a boat won't get you a valid Australian visa. And I think that this goes in the opposite direction, so it might be quite counterproductive.
And presumably you want to talk about that to reinforce that impression.
Well, yeah, exactly. Every major policy change over the last 10 years in this area has been widely broadcast. It's been trumpeted around the world because that's the entire point of the policy. And the decision to reverse that principle is an interesting one, we'll put it that way.
And Van, the sort of public, I'm not sure what the word for it is, but the vague disquiet, I suppose, or dissatisfaction with the lack of information has been bubbling along the last week or so, but of course it became more sharp in the last 48 hours, the deaths.
Well, there are some dead children, I think that we should put that into perspective. I mean, I always find it, you know, very disquieting. What I find disquieting is actually the fact that there are still people in Australia who think that operating from a paradigm of a privileged Western country with a lot of money, that our values and our reality are the same as people who are fleeing Lebanon, Eritrea, Syria, and the other countries that we're getting the asylum seekers from. The boat that just sank had Eritreans, former soldiers, as part of that really horrible conflict, and Lebanese refugees who were saying, you know, we're trying to save our families from fighting every day. They're not sitting down and reading Australian newspapers. They're certainly not sitting down in the comfort of their war-torn, you know, absolutely destructive, violent conflicts that they're fleeing and going, oh, hey, you know, what do you think that the visa situation is in Australia and what's our relative social policy position? They're thinking, oh my God, I've got to get my children out of this country. We have to do anything to get a better life.
But they're also being moved around by a fairly sophisticated network of small business people who are extremely well connected and do have that sort of information and are sufficiently organised to be able to ferry people from those places you mentioned to Indonesia and then on to Christmas Island. I mean, well, the information
well,
is
I mean,
to get
isn't
to them,
that a-
doesn't it?
Isn't that a basic capitalist principle that you see a market and you exploit it? I thought we supported those values in this country. You know, and this is the ridiculous thing. Of course, as long as there's desperation and as long as we're in this ridiculous situation where in Australia, you know, the racism of the policy debate has tied us up in so many practical knots where we have to, like, punish these poor, desperate people for the crime of seeking a better life, you know, just like our parents or our grandparents or our great-grandparents if you're not Aboriginal. And the notion is that that we can suddenly discount that and think that there's not going to be a network that forms to make money from desperation. I mean, what progressives have been calling for, and I cite Malcolm Fraser, former Prime Minister of this country in this debate, is saying that we need to negotiate with the countries of origin for a humanitarian intake, which enables them to not have humanitarian problems if there are persecuted populations, and to create like a point of origin immigration process that, my God, might involve planes. But saying that in this, in the current policy climate, when we're so used to bashing asylum seekers as if they're somehow, you know, like indivisible with the image of terrorism, or these, you know, menacing brown people who are going to threaten our borders, is an absolute outrage. And we are a victim in this country of the language that has been used to set the terms of this debate, rather than any kind of humanitarian or humanly responsible concern to dealing with conflict overseas.
Mark Fletcher, I mean, we're talking yes. there, and Van raises the case of the asylum seekers drowned on Friday our time. People dying 50 metres off the coast of Indonesia, how is that our responsibility?
Yes. Well, it is interesting to see people suggest that we should sort of govern Indonesian waters for Indonesia as well. Just before you get angry telephone calls, I was formerly a policy advisor in immigration. And I find this space interesting, that the people who seem to know perhaps the least are the ones with the strongest opinions. And we cast each other, people who disagree with us, as they're the ones with the slogans. I'm the one without the slogan. I'm the humanitarian case. Everybody else is evil. If you don't take my perspective, you're the one that's wrong. I don't have a hat in the ring and don't really have a preferred solution. But it is interesting that Van would bring up the case of language and then not sort of reflect on the language that she frames the debate in as well.
What dead children? That's not language, that's fact. All those children, all of the children who were on the boats that drowned in the past couple of days, died.
Sure.
They're dead. They're dead children. That's a fact. That's not language. I can't policy
sure,
language
but the way
that
we couch the words, so these ideas.
Couch the words dead children in that friendly, inclusive dead children way.
But why is there not an idea here of individual responsibility? And the assumption that somehow Australia should have responsibility, if not sovereignty, over the area of water in which these people came to grief seems
that's
to
right.
be pushing us out
a
bit far.
Well, you know, the next time it's in Malaysia and they give a call and they say, we contacted, you know, Australian authorities, why don't we rescue the people in Malaysia? And then it's in Thailand, and then it's, you know, further and further back. The question is not so much... The question is why we frame it as a responsibility of Australia to respond to people who are off the coast of Indonesia. And I think that's a difficult question, and I don't really have any answers.
Now, this
they
issue,
phoned us. They contacted us.
Yes,
they
but
asked for Australian help.
Yeah, but I could call in Australia from England, and nobody would say, oh, gosh, Australia didn't fly over immediately to the UK to deal with
the
it.
Boat
There's
was
something
sinking.
Going on in the assumption.
The Australian Navy was nearby. Phone calls were made. They're quoted by saying, we don't care about getting to Australia. Please come and help us. This boat's been taking on water for 24 hours, not to mention the Australian Navy was in a slightly more sophisticated position with boats that were seaworthy. The Indonesians couldn't get boats to the sinking boat. They didn't have that kind of sea power.
Well, neither apparently could Australian. We, which is...
Yeah. I'm not totally sure that we know exactly what happened in the negotiation between the Indonesian and Australian Navy at the moment. And the Indonesians have made, over the last, certainly the last week or two, really big deal about breaches of sovereignty. So I thought that we have one or two very short stories about this before we start allocating blame to who was negligent.
And that issue of sovereignty is a really live one, especially as the Prime Minister Abbott heads towards Indonesia this week. Somewhat unhelpfully, this was the contribution of Alexander Downer midweek.
Instead of a lot of pious rhetoric about the Australian government threatening their sovereignty, they are breaching their people, their boats, their crews are breaching our sovereignty.
Do you have a point, Chris Berg? I mean, we're talking about asylum seekers brought to Australian territory by Indonesians. Should the conversation be turned back a little bit towards that country?
I'm not convinced the word sovereignty is of any particular use here, because by definition you're talking about the sovereignty of two nations when you're talking about border crossings. It is very clearly a diplomatic issue, and I think Alexander Downer's point, to the extent that it was important, is that it is a diplomatic issue that we have to negotiate with the Indonesian government. And I think both sides of politics, once you strip away the rhetoric, actually understand that it is a diplomatic question we have here rather than a singular sovereignty question on either side of the border.
Isn't that the important thing, Van Badham? If we're going to have the sort of solution that you mention, where it's about a regional arrangement, basically, where it's an understanding that we will you know, intervene in this process of people making their way illicitly, perhaps, and do it more formally. That's going to require a fair bit of negotiation and arrangement. What's your confidence that that sort of discussion can be held beginning this week in Indonesia?
Well, I think there are some facts that we actually have to process here. One, that Indonesia is not actually a signatory to the same human rights conventions and refugees that we are, for the simple reason that their legal system has not evolved to take on refugee migration in the ways that ours has. Like, Australia has a legal precedent for the processing of refugees, Indonesia doesn't. And that's one of the facts here. The only Southeast Asian country that has that legislation in place is the Philippines. And this is one of the things that people don't seem to want to pay any attention to. That being the case, most of our neighbours are taking on a lot more refugees. We're vastly outstripped by Malaysia in terms of their refugee populations. And Australia does have the responsibility. If you are a rich country with a lot of resources and an extremely small population, you do actually have a moral responsibility to harbour, you know, the homeless and the desperate. That is all of our heritage, I dare say it again, unless we are Aboriginal. You know, and that's part of what makes me so infuriated in this debate. It's like, well, you know, what about Indonesia? Well, they don't have the same system that we do. They have a population which is more than 10 times the size of ours, with a lot less resources to be shared amongst a lot more people. It has a coastline which is twice the length of ours. There are massive geographical issues at play. And the point is that we need to deal with the country of origin situation, just as we did in the 1970s with Fraser, to his credit, negotiating with the governments of countries like Laos and Vietnam and Cambodia to take what refugees that we could process. It was particularly successful in case of negotiating with Vietnam. And this is what has to happen. We need to fly in refugees. And that is the way that we circumvent, you know, the people smuggler business. That is the way that we minimise, you know, the transit problems that come with countries like Indonesia, which are transit countries, on the geographical reality of a boat trip.
Sure.
We can solve the diplomatic problems with Indonesia by flying refugees from countries of origin. We have the systems with which to do that. And I think the Indonesians are very within their rights to be very cranky about the way they're being treated, because I'm going to call it for what it is. It's racism. It's a white Western country with a government that's been in for 3 weeks, saber-rattling at a country that's had a government that's been in place for nine years.
We have that government that's been in place for 3 weeks, and Mark Fletcher, this coming week, the new Prime Minister will be off to Indonesia on his first major foreign visit. To bring the couple of strands of our conversation together, we talked at the beginning about that notion of, well, not freedom of speech, but of putting the clamps on government communication. Is there a sign there that we're having some difficulties of adjustment to the business of government? And how is that going to play out, do you think, in this Indonesian trip? Are we ready for something this big this early?
Look, the answer really is I don't know, but look at the way that, say, in the Rudd government era, we had that, I think it was the Oceanic Viking, and the way that we had to relate to Indonesia all of a sudden very, very quickly. I think that the incoming government that's now here really will have the same sort of challenges of understanding Indonesia. And one thing that seems to be almost self-evidently true is Indonesia seems to understand us a lot better than we understand Indonesia. We don't understand sort of local politics. We don't understand sort of the structure. As Van Baden sort of said, it's an emerging democracy. It's not that long ago since Suharto, and they're still trying to work out their system as well.
And so, sorry, Mark, go on.
Sorry. Yeah, so if you're trying to say, you know, will he go and do a wonderful job straight off the bat? The answer is probably no, but it's about sort of trying to find out sort of where each country sort of lies on these sort of big questions on how they can work together.
And domestically, Chris, they need to find their feet fairly quickly on this issue of conducting themselves as government, of being happy about the flow of information.
Well, yeah, this was the pitch for government that the coalition offered. They were going to be the adult government compared to the presumably less adult Labor government. And so they're going to need to get up to speed as quickly as possible. And I think what this latest or what the last week has demonstrated is that the media demands of an opposition and the media demands of a government are very, very different.
Yes.
They think that they can and manage their way through the press, but the press turns out is not really there to be managed. It's something there to be coped with.
Well, the press suddenly is taking on its traditional role of being vaguely adversarial.
Well, yeah, but it was to be fair, the press was pretty adversarial to the Labor government.
Indeed,
too.
Yes.
No way, really.
the media and the government don't usually get along very well.
Speaking of the previous Labor government, and something you'll all want to think catch up on this evening, or rather Monday night, Anne Summers and Julia Gillard having their big conversation. It's a big ideas special, which will be broadcast, if you can't make it to the Opera House for the live event, on ABC News 24, 8 o'clock tomorrow night. And that is it, I'm afraid, for our outsiders this morning. They've been blogger Mark Fletcher, playwright Van Badham, and Chris Berg from the Institute of Public Affairs.